The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
Anita lives in Karachi's biggest slum. Monty lives on the other side of Karachi and his father owns half the city. Sonny has left India and moved to England for better opportunities. These are three young people who end up crossing paths in a novel called The Runaways. It raises the question of identity, along with exploring why someone might join the war against the West. Its author, Fatima Bhutto, is on the line. Fatima, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, thank you.
Now, first of all, where did you get the idea for this book?
Well, it felt very much to me that there was a lot that the West didn't understand about radicalism, but more importantly, about the radicalized. And there seems to have been an industry over the last 20 years that has suffocated the discussion on radicalism by saying it's only about religion. And to me, that never seemed true. Radicalism, I think, is born out of pain, out of anger, out of despair, isolation. It's about belonging much more than it is about religion.
Is there, fundamental to all of this, a blaming of the colonial past of the West?
Well, I wouldn't even say the colonial past, but the very current situation with the West, you know, the 20-year-long war on terror, occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan, drone wars in Pakistan, Syria, Libya. I think all these have served to alienate a lot of people. And if we're looking at the recent case of Shamima Begum, for example, who was born in Britain, grew up in Britain, was educated in Britain, even radicalized in Britain, for her country then to say to her, after she's run away to join ISIS, that we won't have you back. Go to Bangladesh, which is a country she's never even been to. I think that says so much about the lack of belonging. Many young people who happen to be from migrant families or happen to be Muslim feel today.
Now, someone who has radical tendencies or who went off to fight with ISIS or be with ISIS, that's one thing. But you even see it in the United States, the dreamers, the so-called dreamers, and DACA, the idea that people who have known no other country than the United States, mm-hmm. who have never broken a law, mm-hmm. might be expelled.
It's incredible because we live in such a connected world and, you know, globalization, the promise of globalization was that there would be limitless connections, movement and possibility. But that only seems to have applied to a very small elite. What happens to millions of brown and black people who believe they belong and are suddenly woken up one day to say, no, you don't?
That sense of identity, I mean, your different characters, let's talk about them. Mm-hmm. Anita, first of all, impoverished, living in a slum, but mm-hmm. what is her religion?
Well, Anita's actually a Christian, and she lives in Machar Colony, which is one of the largest slums in Karachi. And she's a young girl who wants to be seen, who wants to be free, who wants what was promised with globalization, that movement, that opportunity, and all the possibility that that entails.
And does the fact that you have cast her as a Christian play into the story?
Well, I don't want to give too many spoilers away. It's a difficult book to talk about in that sense. But I think when we talk about what it is that young women want in today's world, I think it's quite the same as young men. They want to be in a place where not only are they seen and respected, but where they might have some power and where they might be able to use some of that power in its fullest form, whatever that might be. And Anita certainly has that quality.
Talk to me then about Monty, who lives on the other side of Karachi.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a novel set really on the backdrop of a lot of inequality, of burning inequality that today seems quite global. And Monty is from a very rich family. His father is a property developer. He summers in London. They have a flat near Harrods. But for all his privileges, I think Monty also understands that there's something hollow about his life. And he wants to find out where he can have meaning and where he can have purpose. He just chooses the wrong path.
And finally, Sonny. Let's talk about Sonny, because perhaps the identity crisis there is very acute.
Yes, Sunny's family migrate from Lucknow in India, and he's born in Portsmouth, where he grows up. But again, Sunny feels that he doesn't quite belong in Portsmouth. He doesn't quite belong in India. And he exists in this third space, and he tries very hard to find a place for himself in his own country, in England, and never is quite accepted.
And this would echo the experience, say, of the North African emigrants to France and their children born in France, speaking French, but living in the banlieue, in these suburbs of Paris, and not knowing what they are or where they belong.
Yes, and also not being given a place in the future of your country or your community or your society. You know, a lot of migrant families are allowed in, it seems almost begrudgingly, and then they're separated, and then they have, you know, so many more rules and boundaries that they're not allowed to cross if they would like to stay, if they would like to be included in any shape or form. And I think Sunny's experience follows that. Sunny considers himself very English, but is reminded constantly, whether in school by other students or teachers, that he doesn't quite seem to fit what English is.
Does Brexit cross your horizon in this regard, because of one of the, I think, principal planks of the Brexiteers was always immigration? We really don't want you here. We want to keep Britain as and it's already well diluted, but they imagine it to be still undiluted white people of Anglo-Saxon heritage.
Exactly. And, you know, Sunny's trajectory towards radicalism is charted for him by his cousin, a young man called Oz. And Oz specifically mentions Brexit and UKIP to Sunny when he tells him, this country doesn't want us. They've fought Brexit on images of men like us, of wanting to keep us out. We don't belong here. Let's leave. Let's go somewhere where they need us.
Now, you mentioned the war on terror, and the way that war was fought, it resulted in the displacement of millions of people, the deaths of millions of people over the period of the war on terror. And the feelings of resentment that people might have are based on, in a sense, instead of targeting the individuals who might have been responsible for any outrage, the West decides to go to war on populations.
And absolutely true, Pat. And I think anyone who is brown or black or Muslim or from a non-white, non-Western country, anyone from the global South who has crossed an airport in the West in the last 20 years has been humiliated and has felt wounded and feels insulted. Because of the color of your skin, or because the color of your passport, or because you don't conform to the idea of the enemy that has been so singularly and dangerously created, certainly in the media, if not in other arenas too.
Now, your own background, obviously, you have traveled widely, educated in different parts of the world. Did you grow up in Syria?
I was born in Afghanistan, and I grew up in Damascus, Syria, till I was about 12 years old. And then I finished my schooling in Karachi, Pakistan. Yeah, so I'm not very, I'm terrible to be next to at an airport.
I'm just wondering where you and your identity feel most comfortable.
Well, all those places are home to me. It's difficult, of course, to be in three places at once. So there's always some part of me that's left behind somewhere, some part of me that isn't fully at home anywhere in the world, while at the same time having the idea of so many homes that I can carry around with me.
Mm-hmm. Now, people will guess from your name that you have a political heritage, so you've grown up with politics around the breakfast table, I would suggest. But the position in Pakistan today, the standoff in Kashmir, two nuclear powers, and your prime minister makes a gesture that, you know, might bring everyone back from what could be a nuclear brink. That strained relationship between India and Pakistan, I mean, there was trouble before between Hindus and Muslims before partition, but could it have been different?
I think absolutely it could have been different. You mentioned earlier the colonial past of the West, and I think that that break between India and Pakistan, the tensions between religious communities, that's a consequence of colonialism and colonial rule, which was built on the back of divide and conquer. You know, Pakistan and India, as you also mentioned, are two nuclear nations that have fought many wars between each other, and almost, you know, one per generation. But my generation of Pakistanis certainly don't have any more appetite for war. You know, and I'm sure the same is true for young people in India. We've never actually lived in peace. We've never seen our two countries in peace, and we're talking about 1.5 billion people. And so the recent tensions have been incredibly worrying, but I'm very happy to have seen Pakistan respond in a dignified and humane way. And I hope that we continue to do so because, you know, nuclear war between these two countries wouldn't just affect our nations. You know, 1 to 2 billion people would suffer the consequences of a nuclear strike between these two countries.
Now, you were born in Afghanistan, and, mm-hmm. you know, had you lingered there, who knows whether or not you'd be talking to me now, because you might not have the literary skills to write as you have done. How do you see the future of Afghanistan, given that the Americans are talking peace with the Taliban, and yet the fundamental values of the Taliban would be something that would be inimical to Western values?
Well, I think that, you know, this 20-year-long war has been fought essentially to return Afghanistan back to the situation it was before it began. The loss of lives, of livelihood, of peace, of stability, you know, all that has been borne by the Afghan people who, I think, like anyone else, want the same things we all do. They want to be free. They want to engage in dignified work. They want to be able to live in peace with their families. So I don't know that those are necessarily Western values. I think those are human values. But I think we're all, it seems a very odd time in the subcontinent today, you know, just to watch India go through its elections in the coming 2 months, India and Pakistan on the brink of war currently, and Afghanistan in talks with the Taliban. I really don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 months, but we're all watching very closely.
Mm. Now, finally, I should ask you once again to return to the characters of your novel, The Runaways, and the sense that being alienated, being detached in a sense from an identity in which they feel secure. You obviously feel very secure in many parts of the world, but in the milieu in which you find yourself today, mm-hmm. I mean, do you still feel that there are disapproving eyes that gaze on people like yourself?
Oh, all the time, Pat. I mean, when you watch television, when you see, you know, Homeland or The Bodyguard, or those kind of shows on TV, and you see how Muslims are portrayed, you can't help but feel wounded because there isn't one type of Muslim, just as there's not one type of Irishman or one type of Englishman. And we're reduced so often to an offensive caricature of ourselves. And not only that, you have the continual feeling of being talked down to whenever you move around the West, whether it's America, you know, Trump's ban on people where he literally won't allow you in, to conversations that are shaded quite heavily with racism. So unfortunately, I felt that getting worse rather than better over the last few years. And I don't think Brexit's going to help that at all.
It is cyclical, I suppose, because when Obama came to the White House, there was great hope that really a page had been turned in history. And then what do? They vote in Trump.
Well, I think Obama was a very charismatic and hopeful figure. But unfortunately, his policies, for us at least, were not hopeful. You know, his first drone strike against Pakistan was carried out something like 72 hours after he took office. And he approved more drone strikes against Pakistan than even George W. Bush had over his entire presidency. So it's a constant negotiation, I think, for those of us in the global South. We veer very heavily between hope and despair, and I don't really see that changing, at least not anytime soon.
Well, the novel is called The Runaways. It's published by Viking, priced around €17, and its author, Fatima Bhutto. Thank you very much for joining us on our program.
Thank you for having me.